We have a mitzvah say, Daraisa Kedoshim to you. Be holy. Be holy. Now, just to be clear, a mitzvah is an obligation, a chiyuv. Not a good idea, not a beneficial option. We're obligated. Like it or not, be holy. And if you think about this, this expression is repeated many times in the Chumash. Viskadashim, visim kedoshim, visim kedoshim, visim kedoshim lokechem. We say it in Shema twice a day. At the end of the Shema, we say the words, So clearly this concept of kedoshim to you, be holy, is not just a specific mitzvah, but apparently we're obligated in it. The Ramban explains that this mitzvah is not just a typically specific mitzvah, meaning there's a mitzvah called tzitzit, a mitzvah called tefillin, a mitzvah called lulav and lulav. And that's specific and very, very detailed. This is a much broader general concept. Kedoshim to you is something that's a category. It covers a huge throng of behaviors and things. It's not just a command, it's a rule. And if you think about it, it's quite problematic. Number one, what does it mean to be holy? Be holy. Okay, I'll be it. Just tell me what it means and I'll do it right away. Tell me, what does it mean? But number two, listen very carefully to the Lashon. Kedoshim to you, be holy. A state of being. You tell me to put on tefillin, I can put on tefillin. You tell me to pick up a lulav, I can pick up a lulav. What do you mean, be holy, be in a state of holiness? How do you be something? How do you reach a state of holiness? All right, but what makes it far more difficult is the Medrash Rabbah in Vayikra says, Kedoshim to you. Shem says to the Jewish people, be holy. Yachol kamoni. You might think you should be as holy as me, Hashem. Tam loma no, ki kadosh ani. Look at the end of the pasuk. I'm holy, kedusha si lamal mi kedusha schem. My kedusha is higher than your kedusha. So again, the way you read the pasuk according to Medrash Rabbah is, Kedoshim to you, ki kadosh ani Hashem alakechem. Be holy, but not like me, says Hashem. You'll be holy, but keep in mind that my kedusha is above your kedusha. What in the world does that mean? You might have thought that we would be on the same level of kedusha as Hashem. No. The pasuk teaches no. You're not going to be on the same level. Number one, what does this concept being kadosh mean? And especially, how can I reach a state of it? Number two, what does this medrash mean? You might think you'd be holy like Hashem. Hashem says no. My kedusha is higher than your kedusha. And I'd like to see if we could address these two questions and see if we could better understand it. But before we do that, what do? The minute we don't understand something in the Chumash, we turn to the Rishonim. Let's see if the Rishonim help. Rashi explains, what does it mean, Kedoshim to you? Prushim and Araya, separated from illicit relationships. Now, that's going to make me holy? That means avoid sin. Don't live with an Eishes Ish. And don't live with a forbidden woman. Okay, that's going to make me holy? And more than that, let's say I do that. So you might have thought I'll be holy like Hashem. No. Hashem says, no, my holiness is higher. Rashi makes it more difficult. If you look in the Ramban makes it far more difficult. Says the Ramban, this is not just a broad mitzvah, and this is a defining concept in the Torah. See, the Torah is concerned. There are many things that are permitted, many things that are forbidden. But a person could be a novel Bereshis HaTorah. You could find ways to be Zolel V'Soveya. You could be a glutton. And you could be a drunkard. And you won't violate any specific Torah laws. Comes along this mitzvah and says, no, be porush, abstain, control, separate yourself, curb your appetites, limit desires. It's a general principle that tells you in all of your conduct, be controlled, be separated from taiva, and be separated from desires. Don't give in to them, limiting you from pleasures in general. Now, that seems to make things even more difficult because it's a wonderful concept, very nice idea. But let's say I do that. I don't get drunk. I'm not too involved in it. I'm not a hedonist. So now I'm holy? All of a sudden now I'm holy? And I'm so holy that you might have thought I'd be like Hashem. Hashem says, no, my holiness is higher than yours. Okay, so let's see if we can better understand what the pasuk is sharing with us. And to do that, let me share with you an observation. I was a high school rebbe for about 15 years. And one of the interesting observations I made is that most yeshiva guys have this attitude. Oh, if I was a public school kid, if I was a guy, wow, I'd have so much pleasure. Wow, unbelievable. Nebuch, listen, I'm not saying I'm sorry about this, but, you know, nebuch, I'm restricted, I'm constricted. I don't have the pleasure that the guy have. And I would invariably tell them either early in the year or some point, you're making a total blunder. If you live a Torah lifestyle, you'll have far more pleasure in this world than you would if you were a guy. And I'll explain why. Imagine you find yourself on a deserted island somewhere. You're stranded, You haven't eaten for 3 days. You're starving. And you're searching the island, nothing to eat, nothing to eat. Finally, under a tree, you see a brown bag. You open it up, and there it is, a peanut butter sandwich. That peanut butter sandwich has been baking in the sun for 6 months. You're so hungry, you tear into it, you devour it, you swallow it. Here's a question. Did you enjoy that eating? One thing for sure, you had a lot of passion, a lot of desire. You were very, very hungry, no question about that. But how much pleasure did you have? I doubt that this is going to be one of the high water marks in your life. Oh my goodness, the pleasure, the rancid peanut butter as it coated down my throat, the scratching of the throat, the palate. I don't think so. But you see, there's pleasure and there's passion. Passion is a craving, desire, hunger, and urge. Pleasure is a state of feeling, being pleased and being gratified. And the two are very different. And this is something that the media for sure and most people totally mix up. Pleasures and passions. As a matter of fact, if you listen to the media, anything that you have a desire for must be a tremendous amount of pleasure. And the distinction between passion and pleasure never seems to hit them, and they are vastly, vastly different. Now, let me explain to you what I mean. Let's imagine I'm a hedonist. I've set my goal to have as much pleasure in this world as I possibly can. Now, Nebuch, I can't really do that because I'm not rich. You know, if I had money, then I get pleasure. Nebuch, I don't have it. And then one day, I buy the lottery and I hit win. Oh my goodness, $365 million in cash. Awesome joy, I got it. So, being the hedonist that I am, I set out to fully, fully enjoy. Not just pleasure, heaps and heaps of pleasure. Pleasure upon pleasure. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may die. Let's party. And I set out on my life of pleasure. Now, the first thing I do is I buy myself a private island in the Pacific. What better place to enjoy life than there? I hire a team of butlers, maids, entire dining room staff, an Italian chef for breakfast, Mediterranean cuisine for lunch, and dinner nothing but my finest personal chef. And so I set out on my pursuit of pleasure. Now, I plan out the first morning's breakfast, Belgian waffles, delicately toasted, covered in Vermont maple syrup, topped with fresh picked strawberries, hand-whipped ice cream, and I'll have orange juice flown in that morning from Brazil, all served by white-gloved waiters, and I prepare for my feast. Wow, my anticipation. I mean, this is going to be amazing. This is going to be great. This is going to be wow. And then I come to sit down for breakfast. The white-gloved waiter pulls out the chair. I sit down, and then the waiter brings by the tray, covered, of course, because I have to keep it exactly at the taste that it came off the griddle. I take the first bite. Wow, it's everything I thought of. The flavor, the aroma, the depth of it, the sweetness. Well, not exactly, but it does taste good. It tastes pretty good. A second bite, not far behind. I concentrate on the aromas and the waft on my palate. I focus on the balance of flavors and texture. Then the third bite, then the fourth. And then something interesting happens. My mind starts wandering. I just start thinking about everything else about my day and what else. And all of a sudden I'm done. Hey, what happened? And I discover the first rule of pleasure. The first rule of pleasure is the sizzle is better than the steak. Every pleasure is overly sold. Every pleasure is sold to be, wow, it's going to be amazing, it's going to be amazing. And when you actually have it, it's okay. But sure, it isn't what you thought it would be. The sizzle is always better than the steak. The buildup is great. The anticipation is powerful. Every pleasure is over-promised and under-delivered. But listen, I'm a hedonist. I am not giving up so quick. So I am continuing my life of pleasure. Anyway, after breakfast, of course, a meal would not be complete without dessert. So I have my waiter bring by my private brand of Rocky Road blend ice cream, topped with fresh whipped cream, only from Hereford cows. The cream is just so much thicker. And I lash into a gusto. Well, not quite, because I'm pretty full by now. But this is great stuff. I mean, really, really great. First spoon, the second, the third. And then I start slowing down simply because I'm out of room. And I discover the second rule of pleasure. Every pleasure has a limit, has a finite amount of time. 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, whatever it may be, but then it's done. The pleasure itself, however deep, however rich, however memorable it may be, how long does it last? 10 minutes, a half hour, an hour, but that's it. And it's done. And this is the second rule of pleasure. Every pleasure has its limit. But I'm not giving up that quickly. I've waited years for real pleasure, and I'm going to do it. So I settle in for the rest of my life of pleasure. Now, obviously I have to go to bed early. I can't get a bad night's sleep. I wake up cranky and I can't enjoy anything. I get into bed early and I wake up the next morning. Wow, let's go. I stretch my arms and this deep sense of satisfaction and fulfillment fills me as I contemplate a meaningful and productive day of pleasure seeking. Well, not quite so satisfying and fulfilling, but let's go. I sit back down. I tell the maitre d' that yesterday's breakfast was phenomenal. Let's do it again. He brings back the same waffles, the same aroma, the crispiness, the tender inside. I bite into it and they're good, but they just don't taste like they did yesterday. And I discover the third rule of pleasure. The third rule of pleasure is the first time is the best time, but there's only one first time. A new restaurant opens up and you go, they have this amazing meal and it's just incredible. The next time you go and order the very same meal, it's good, but never the same as the first time. The first time you own a car, wow. First time you drive a car, it's amazing. The first time you own a house, oh my goodness. I clearly remember I was a young Rebbe in my 30s. We bought a house in Rochester and I was the richest man in North America. My house today is three times the size. Incredibly, I can never be as rich as I was then because the first time is the best time, but there's only one first time. And so listen, I'm not giving up so quick though. I am a hedonist and even though it's true, things are wearing a bit thin, but I am pursuing pleasure. So what do? I head to the Mercedes dealership, buy a string of cars in every color of the rainbow, off to Africa for a hot balloon ride over the Serengeti, over to Paris to go bungee cord jumping off the Eiffel Tower. No expense is too great, no distance too far. The absolute pursuit of pleasure is my goal. And when I come back from my exotic, far-flung adventures, I discover the fourth rule of pleasure. I had a good time. Ask someone to describe a pleasurable experience, a week-long cruise in the Bahamas, maybe a ski trip to the Alps, but listen to how they say it. Wow, it was amazing. I had such a good time. I enjoyed it so much. All in the past tense. Because once the pleasure is had, it's gone, used up, no more, nothing left but memories. And that is the fourth rule of pleasure. Pleasure is had and is gone, there's nothing left. Now these rules show themselves in every culture, every time period. They're an iron law in man's stay on the planet. All pleasures are limited and passing. They look so alluring, so tempting. The sizzle sounds amazing. But when you actually take it, part of it, it's just empty. It leaves me empty spiritually, but even physically. How long does it last? How deep is the pleasure? How much do I really enjoy it? And even if all of that is true, there's only one first time, and once it's gone, it's done. So here's the question. Couldn't Hashem have done a better job? I know that Hashem is very, very capable. Hashem created 100 billion galaxies, each containing 100 billion stars. Hashem created the atom. Hashem created quantum mechanics. Couldn't Hashem have done a better job with this thing called pleasure? But you listen very carefully to how the Mesillas Yesharim describes pleasures, and you'll understand that Hashem is very, very capable. Hanasa olam, pleasure of the world, ein roi lo, and only fit le'ezer ulesiyua, to be an aid and a help. Why? Shilo nachas ruach, to give him a relaxed spirit, yishvadas, a sort of settled mind. Pleasures have their purpose. Pleasures are put into the world for a very important purpose. You need pleasures. You enjoy them. You give a yishvadas and certain nachas ruach. But they're all helpmates. The things that help me do my job. If you pursue them as an end in and of themselves, no kidding, they don't work because they weren't created for that purpose. Could Hashem have done a better job? He sure did. That's called the world to come. And the world to come, the pleasure there is endless, wafts upon wafts, pleasures upon pleasures. Everything my hedonist friend believed he'd get, he can't get it here because the human being was not created as a kli makabel, as a something receptacle to receive pleasure. Every pleasure is oversold and underdelivered because that's not what Hashem made them for. Hashem made them for as sort of diversions, things that you do that help you relax, help you get settled, help you get back into things, but they're tools to be used. When you understand that and you use them properly, they're tremendous, tremendous helpmates, and they help you, and they're good. The Torah is not into being a monk. Asceticism, you know, running away from all pleasures is not part of Jewish religion. Hashem created every pleasure to be had, but used, not as a focal point, not as a target, not something I pursue, but something to be used as a tool to help me grow. One more step. When Hashem created us, Hashem took two very diverse parts and put them together into one synthesis called man. Within me, as I speak to you, there are two discrete voices. One is an neshama, the seichel, pure holiness. All it wants to do is what's right, what's good, what's proper. All it wants to do is help other people. All it wants to do is serve Hashem. It's pre-programmed with every instinct to do everything holy, good, and proper. Within me, there's also another voice, the nefesh habahami, animal soul. Within the soul of man is the same type of animal soul that you'll find in any animal in the wild kingdom. The giraffe, the baboon, the cow, the donkey, they all have a nefesh. There's something inside them, programming, instincts. But it's not just instincts. There's a live, vibrant part. When the dog goes to sleep at night, it's still breathing, but it's not alert. It wakes up and it suddenly is alive. That's a nefesh. Within a nefesh habahami, within an animal soul, Hashem put all the appetites, instincts, drives, and desires to keep that animal alive, as well as to bring about the next generation. Within the human being is also a nefesh habahami. Within me are all the drives, instincts to keep myself alive, as well as bring about the next generation. But they're very, very powerful instincts. The I whom speaking to you am in an utter battle. These two voices within me battle for primacy, and they fight for control. I either listen to one or listen to the other, but one or the other wins. But every moment of life, every interchange with another human being, every moment that I make a decision is ultimately a battle between these two voices. Now, interestingly, whichever one you use more becomes dominant, becomes primary. If you use your seichel, your neshama more, it comes to the fore, becomes stronger and bigger. Your nefesh habahami becomes weaker and weaker. The opposite, if you give in to the nefesh habahami all the time, you give into it, it becomes larger and more prominent and more in control. Two human beings could be walking the earth, one a malach, an angel in the form of a man, the other one a behemoth, an animal in the form of a man. They look outwardly the same, vastly, vastly different. And I want to share with you something powerful that the Mesillas Yesharim says next. He says, while it is your goal to grow and accomplish and use pleasures as tools to grow, you have to understand that every single focus of your life, anything you think about, anything you're focused on, should be one thing, to gain access, to gain closeness to Hashem. You should have no purpose other, small or large acts, elis karev laborate, to get close to your Creator, velishbar kol hamachitzos, and to break down all of the interruptions, the walls, the doors, the gates, that are mafsik, that separate between me and my Creator. There are many, many things that make it difficult for me to experience Hashem. Many things that make it difficult to daven. Many things that make it difficult to keep Shabbos properly. Many things that makes it difficult because I'm housed in this body, cloaked in this heavy, heavy cloak of physicality, and I can't hear, I can't feel. And within this, there are many, many barriers for my experiencing Hashem. The goal of my life, the purpose of my life, the reason Hashem put me here, is to break down all of those mechitzos, and break down all of those barriers so there'd be nothing interrupting between me and Hashem. And then listen to this next step. Achim mashech acharov, until I'm pulled after Hashem, mamish literally kebarza, like iron acha evin ashoeves, like iron after a powerful magnet. The magnet pulls. If you break down all the mechitzas, if you get rid of all the pull of physicality, if you really allow your neshama to come to the fore, you'll be pulled after Hashem literally like a magnetic pull, an irresistible pull. And if you'd like to know what it means to be holy, all it means is listen to the voice inside. Listen to that voice inside that says, grow, accomplish, do, feel another Jew's pain, and do great things for others, do for yourself, serve Hashem properly. Within me is that voice. The Torah is the system of spiritual self-perfection that allows that voice to come to the fore, but it's a constant battle with one or the other winning primacy. If you stop the nefesh habahami from controlling, you listen only to the neshama, it gets stronger and stronger, nefesh habahami becomes weaker and weaker, and then there's a natural pull, like a bar of iron after a powerful magnet, I'm pulled to be close to Hashem, because within me is a neshama that's pure and holy. What do you mean be holy? Why avoid pleasures? Not avoid pleasures, use them properly. And the Ramban doesn't say don't take pleasure, control them, use them. You see, within me is two voices. The Nefesh HaBahami, all it seeks is pleasure. All it seeks are its appetites, its hungers, and it's all it knows. And if I'm a hedonist, what that means is I'm constantly allowing the Nefesh HaBahami, the animal soul, to come to the fore again and again, become stronger and stronger and stronger. Says Rashi, be poresh, separate from illicit relations. What's that going to do? When you start doing that, you're going allowing your neshama to come to the fore. Automatically, you're going to grow in holiness. You'll be holy. Why? Because within you is full neshama. Within you is holiness. All you have to do is stop the other part. Just stop the Nefesh HaBahami from winning. Stop it from gaining primacy. And just exercise your neshama and do not exercise the Nefesh HaBahami. You mean live like a monk in a cave? No. Use pleasures. Pleasures are tools. But if I start pursuing them, what that means is it's my Nefesh HaBahami speaking. I see how fleeting these pleasures are. I see how irrelevant they are. I see that you had them and they're gone. Every pleasure is oversold and underdelivered. I get it. So how can I pursue it as something important? I'll tell you how. Because I'm in this body, and I am a body, and I'm a Nefesh HaBahami. I'm an animal. That's who I am. And the minute you start pursuing pleasures for pleasure's sake, what you're doing is exercising one thing, your animal soul. But if I stop and say to myself, why does Hashem create me? What's life about? And I understand it's put here to grow, to accomplish, to change the essence of me. And then I'm going to be pulled to Hashem. Why? Because I follow the Torah's path. I avoid the Nefesh HaBahami's pull against me. I use pleasures as tools in the proper way, the proper time, with the proper intention. Then it doesn't hurt me. Quite the opposite. Yishuv Hadas, Nachas Ruach. I need these things. Every human being needs a sense of relaxation. Every human being needs time off. Every human being needs these things. Use them as tools to gain control. Use them as tools to propel yourself, and then you'll be holy. Kedoshim to you, the Torah tells us, be holy. How can I be holy? Very simple. It's natural. It's instinctive. Within me is that voice. Just don't do the opposite. Avoid the Nefesh HaBahami's control. Avoid being licked, living in this world. Avoid all the pull, and naturally you'll grow, you'll accomplish, and Hashem will come to the fore, and you will be a holy individual. Right now, who am I? Not sure. Two parts, each one pulling, each one vying for primacy. Stop and listen to Neshama and be holy. And I believe that's the answer to the first question. What does it mean to be holy? Be instinctive. Just follow your Neshama. How does one reach a state of holiness? That's following the Torah. The Torah is a system of spiritual self-perfection. But more than that, you have a Neshama is naturally, instinctually hungry. Hungry for what? Hungry to do everything that's right, that's good, that's proper. I have two distinct hungers within me. There's a hunger within me for animal pleasures. In this world, only about this world, only in these things I need. But there's an opposite voice within me that only desires spirituality, only desires doing what's good, what's right, what's proper. Which voice I listen to determines who I'll be for eternity, either the behemoth or the pure, holy soul, but it's contained within me. Be holy because it's natural. Be holy, it's instinctive. And just allow your neshama come to the fore. Okay. Now I'd like to share with you a story that I've told in other shmuzim, but for our illustrative purposes, I think it's very helpful. I was once speaking in a certain community, and I did the whole shmuz that I was going to do, and then many, many people came over after with questions, thoughts, observations. Out of the corner of my eye, I noticed an older couple sort of hovering, sort of waiting. And when every person came by, all the people left. Finally, the older couple came by. The woman comes by first and says, Rabbi, I loved the lecture. I said, oh, thank you very much. Husband follows suit. Rabbi, I loved the lecture, but... Now, I've been around the block often enough to know when you hear a man say, Rabbi, I loved the lecture, but... this is going somewhere. So I waited to see where we were going. Rabbi, I loved the lecture, but... according to what you've just said, I've wasted my entire life. Now, when you're on this side of the lectern, an 80-year-old man is on the other side saying, according to what I've said, he's wasted his entire life, and you know that he might be correct. It's a very, very uncomfortable place to be in. What was the great chiddush that I said? What was a novel idea that this man never heard of, But according to what I said, wasted his entire life? Very simply, Hashem created us for a purpose. This is the gym and there's the spa. Put into the gym, we're here, put here to grow, to accomplish, to be challenged, to become the great person I can be. When I'm done my job here, I go to the spa. That's where I enjoy for eternity what I was put on the planet for. This man said, I never heard that. I never knew that. Since I'm a little kid, I've been making money and I've done very well. Thank God, that's all I've known. And I never knew this idea. Now, it's a bit ironic because we were talking in a shul. The man wore tefillin 6 days a week. Man kept Shabbos kosher. And this little detail, what we're doing here, why Hashem created us, what life is about, kind of slipped by. A bit curious because it's the essence of everything. But I wanted you to understand, why is it vital? And why is it vital that you understand why Hashem created us? And why is it vital to understand that we're here for a few short years to grow and accomplish, and for eternity I'll be what I shape myself into? Number one, it frames every decision you make in life. Obviously, if I'm here and then I die and it's over. Imagine I and Elsie the cow leave this earth the same way. When Elsie the cow dies, her nefesh just evaporates, not there. Imagine that I hit the ground and black and it's done all over. Then obviously the life choices that I'm going to make are going to be very different than if I knew that there's a world to come, but not just a world to come. That I was put here for one reason, to be challenged, to go through various situations so I grow and accomplish, that for eternity I will be what I shape myself into. Clearly, it's going to make a very real difference in the way I make choices in life, in how I use my time. But there's another part that's also almost as important. How could you understand Hashem on any level if you don't understand the world to come? Look at this world. There's so much pain, so much suffering, so much bloodshed, so many unhappy people. Just in Eretz Yisrael, the holy Jewish people, and look at the Chayalim, look at Rachmanitz, the holiest Jews. Hezdi Yeshiva guys are the bravest, most incredible people alive. And Rachmanitz, you see so many injured, Rachmanitz, so many dies, some yeshivas lost 4 guys, some 6 guys. My son is in yeshiva, they lost 8 guys by now. The holiest of the holiest. You have to say, Hashem, what's the plan? What's going on? And if you don't understand the world to come, there is no answer to that question. But not just that question, so many questions. Pain, suffering, disease, illness, a stupefying immune system in man, so complex to catch every disease except gaping holes clearly designed into the immune system and disease states that seem to be perfectly suited to enter like the Swiss cheese hole right there. Why does Hashem do that? What's life about? If life ends in the grave, number one, you're going to make a lot of dumb mistakes. But number two, you have no understanding of Hashem. How could you understand Hashem on any level? So let's begin with one very simple concept. Why did Hashem create us? What is life about? But not for my purpose. Let's ask from Hashem's focal point. What did Hashem intend? And what did he have in mind? And the Derech Hashem, the Mesil Sharim, all the Mesil Sharim say, one thing and one thing only. Hashem's the mativ, Hashem's the giver, the ultimate benefactor. Hashem wants a share of his good with others. The ultimate good is being close to Hashem. Ultimate good is being dovek to Hashem. Hashem put us in this world, gave us a chance to grow and accomplish. Accomplish what? Being worthy of being in Hashem's proximity. The more I grow, the more I change, the more like Hashem I am, and thereby the closer I am to Hashem for eternity. The greatest enjoyment, the greatest joy, the greatest pleasure is being close to Hashem. Hashem created everything in existence for one reason. Hashem's the mativ, Hashem's the giver. What does Hashem have in this? Nothing. What does Hashem gain if I do mitzvahs? Nothing. What does Hashem care? Hashem only cares because he wants me to grow. Hashem only cares if I sin or do mitzvahs because Hashem is concerned for me. And when you understand that, you understand your Creator, at least on a simple level. At least you understand one thing. Everything Hashem does is for the best. Tov Hashem lakol. Hashem is good to everyone. Everyone. Tzaddik or Rasha. Rich or poor. Young or old. Hashem is the mativ. Rachamav al kol ma'asav. And his mercy is on every one of his creations. Hashem is bountiful mercy. And bountiful love. Unbridled love is showered across the world. Why is there suffering? Why is there pain? Because the man needs it. There are many, many challenges I'm going to face in this world that will not serve me any good in this world. but they'll challenge me to grow or shrink, transcend or crumble. But for eternity, I am what I shape myself into during those moments of challenge. When you understand that, you understand Hashem is all good. Any pain that I suffer is good for me. Ultimately, I may not enjoy it at the time. I don't wish for it, but it's for my good. It's my betterment. And you at least have some level of understanding Hashem. Now, not only is that very relevant to everything we do in life, because we're supposed to be Ovdei Hashem, servants of Hashem, it's imperative, it's vital for a particular mitzvah as one of the central mitzvahs in our serving Hashem. Sefer Chinuch quotes it, Rambam brings it, almost all the Rishonim quote it, mitzvah leleches uledametz bedarkei Hashem yisbarach. It's a mitzvah, a positive commandment, to try to be like Hashem as much as we can, to go in the ways of Hashem. Just like Hashem is merciful, we have to be merciful. Just like Hashem is kindly, we have to be kindly. Perfection only exists by Hashem. Anybody who says, I'm perfect, I mean, none of you are perfect, you don't even know what the word means. There's only one entity in existence that's perfect, that's Hashem. Any perfection other than Hashem is measured in comparison to Hashem. How much like Hashem is he? 2%, 10%, 80%. And Moshe Rabbeinu was perfect, almost perfect as a human being. He was most like Hashem as possible, meaning he was a meitiv. Hashem's the giver. Hashem's the ultimate benefactor. Hashem wants a share of his good with others. The only way to be like Hashem is to be like Hashem. Hashem created everything, and all Hashem has in mind is giving, giving, giving. If you want to be like Hashem, you have to learn to be other-centered. You have to learn to be a giver. You have to learn to feel another Jew's pain. You have to learn there are people in the world that I care about, and you have to learn to do good for others. And that's a problem. Why? Because the Rasulullah explains to us that the strongest force in the human is self-preservation. The strongest force in the human is self-love. And that's contradictory. If the strongest force I have is me, my benefit, my good, taking care of me and understanding what I need and taking care of my needs, how could you expect me to be other-centered? It's almost contradictory. The Shari Yosher of Shimon Shkop, in the introduction to that phenomenal sefer, tells us the answer to this. He says, would you like to know the answer to this conundrum, this contradiction? How could it be that you should be like Hashem, who's a giver, when by nature we're, Hashem created us with a powerful need to help ourselves? Self-love is so prominent, so strong. He says, you have to understand one thing. You have to understand that you are not the body. You're the one inside. And the mistake that we make is we mistake our body for us. And I have a mushal that I use in one of Shmuzim, and I think it bears repeating. In the ancient Japanese world, there was something called Jinba Itai. What's Jinba Itai? These were mounted archery soldiers, and they would shoot the arrows while riding a horse. Now, if you think about it, it's a rather interesting idea. You know, if you hold a bow and arrow, you need one hand to hold the bow, other hand to hold the arrow. How could you hold the reins of a horse? Now, in the good old days, when they started mounting soldiers on horses, if you were an archer, what you did was you stopped the horse where it was, pulled back the bow, held it this way, the arrow, and good to go. Well, the Japanese, around the 11th century, discovered something interesting. Because the horse was a prime mode of locomotion, they created cavalry, horse-mounted fighters, but what they would do is they trained these fighters to control the riding of the horse with their body, with their legs. And you could see, even today, they have exhibitions of the samurai, those are modeling samurai, they'll ride a horse at full speed, hold the bow, pull back the arrow, and shoot at a target. And they've learned to control the horse just with their body motion, their legs. They become one with the horse, Jinba Itai, one with the horse. Okay, nice concept. Now, I want you to imagine for a minute that you are a Jinba Itai soldier, you're a samurai, elite group, and you're preparing for battle. You know you're going to fight against an enemy, and it's going to be a long battle, so you make sure your horse has everything it needs. It has oats, has a blanket, everything it needs. It's all there already, and you set out to battle. Only one problem. You forgot about you. I didn't bring any food for me. I didn't bring a tent. I didn't bring a blanket. I forgot about me. Would you like to know what that the nimshal is? That is us. We confuse our body with us. So we spend so much attention, so much effort, energy in our body, in our this world situation. This is the horse. Use the body well. Use desire well. Use the horse. It'll pull you far. It'll bring you to heights you couldn't reach otherwise. But it's a horse that you use. It's something that you utilize, but you control it. There's a horse and you're the rider. And if you forget that little fact that there's a rider to this horse, and you take such good care of the horse, make sure all the horse's needs are met, making lots of money, I eat well, I rest plenty of time, I exercise daily because I need to take care of my horse. That's wonderful. But what are you doing for you? What about the rider? And explains Rishim Shkup, this is the concept. You see, who are you? Who are you? If you think about yourself as a body, you will be utterly, totally, completely self-centered. It's my needs and my desires, what I need. That's all the Nefesh HaBahamim knows. All it knows is me, 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 and only me. But once you get a little bit elevated and you recognize there's a rider to this horse, then suddenly you realize you're much bigger than that. And now suddenly you could expand. And when you expand, you start realizing that there are other people in the world. Because I'm not just the body with all my own needs. I'm a neshama. And I realize I'm part of a family. I have a wife. I have kids. And when you get elevated, you start feeling your kid's pain. Oh my goodness, my child is an extension of me. When he's hurt, I feel the pain. My wife. And my wife, how could I let her stay in trouble? How could I bear to see her in pain? She's like a part of me. I'm a part of this larger group. Because I'm not the body. I'm not limited by the confines of this physical existence. I am a neshama housed in this body, and I relate to others within my circle. They're a part of me. I'm a part of them. And explains Rav Shimon Shkup, when you get more elevated than that, and you become even more pure, you begin to realize, I'm not just part of a family. I'm part of a community. Maybe it's my shul. Maybe it's my yeshiva. I'm a part of this. And suddenly what happens to them deeply concerns me, because I'm part of them. They're part of me. We're all part of a whole. And suddenly it's very relevant to me, their welfare. Suddenly their state of being is very important to me. If they're in pain, I'm in pain. They're having a good time, and it's good for them, it's good for me, because I'm a part of it. And then explains in Shemesh Kup, there's a higher level. When you become really pure, you realize you're part of an Am. There's an Am Yisrael, one holy people, and I'm a part of it. The entire nation, every single Jew, I'm a part of them, they're a part of me. I feel the pain, I'm concerned, I care. Because I recognize I'm a neshama. I recognize I'm temporarily in this body, temporarily in this state, but I, the one inside, the one who thinks, the one who feels, will live on for eternity, and I'm a part of a whole, part of an entire Am Yisrael. And then when you get even more holy, when you get to the level of Avos, you realize you're part of Hashem's world, and everything in existence matters to you, because it's Hashem's world, and I'm a part of Hashem's world. I'm but a small cog in that world, but everything that occurs in the world is a part of me. Everything that happens, I'm a part of it. And suddenly you're a different sense. Explains to Rishim Shkup, that is the answer to this dilemma. How could you be so powerfully self-absorbed and still be concerned for others? Because you elevate yourself. You include others in your circle of I. It's not just me and me alone. It's me and me and my family. Not just me and my family, it's me and my community. Not just me and my community, it's me and the Klal Yisrael, maybe even the whole world. But you see, it's my self-preservation, my self-love that drives me to be concerned for them because they're a part of me, I'm a part of them. How do you answer the contradiction? Answer the contradiction very simply. I'm concerned because I'm a part of them. It's self-preservation, self-love. It says Hashem, Kedushasi l'mala mekedushaschem. Hashem says, my holiness is different than yours. My holiness is totally self-other-centered. Nothing in it for Hashem. Hashem says, you should be holy. Be holy as you can be. But keep in mind that you're different than I, says Hashem. My holiness is without expecting anything in return, not because there's anything in it for me, just because I'm the giver and the meitiv. You'll never reach that. Hashem says, I put within you self-love. I put within you a desire to take care of your needs. The way you grow is by expanding the I. Recognize you're not a body. There's a rider to that horse. Recognize that rider to the horse is a part of a whole, part of a family, part of a community. And suddenly your self-love is going to propel you to be concerned for them. It's a part of me. I'm part of my family, part of my community, part of my nation is in pain. So suddenly I become other-centered, the very different than Hashem. Our Kedusha is great. Our Kedusha can propel us to be incredibly holy. But says Hashem, my Kedusha is holier than yours, as mine's completely other-centered. And that is the answer to the second question. And what's in it for Hashem? Nothing. What does Hashem gain from anything that happens in creation? Nothing. Hashem is completely, totally other-centered, created everything, orchestrates everything, maintains everything, because Hashem is the giver. We'll never reach that level. We can reach a level of greatness. We can reach a level of holiness, and recognizing that I am the rider, expanding my circle of I, feeling other people are part of me and I'm a part of them, and suddenly I care. Suddenly I'm concerned. Suddenly I deeply, deeply need them to do well. And when they're in pain, I'm in pain. And now I want to explain to you the real danger of pleasures. Why does the Ramban say, and be so careful of extra pleasures, and be so careful not to be involved in wine and women and things? What's so bad about it? I'll tell you what's so bad about it. It destroys any kedusha you have. You become just a horse. Only the horse pursues pleasures for pleasure's sake. Only the horse is concerned with its oats and its blanket and its warmth and resting. If I'm going to exert extra effort in pleasures, pursuing pleasures for pleasure's sake, what I'm doing is exercising the horse, the opposite of kedusha. I'm lowering myself. What do you mean I'm lowering myself? I'm detaching myself from any other Jew. Why? Why can't I love Jews and be into pleasure? Because the minute I'm into pleasure, I am this body. This body is concerned for its needs, its opportunities, and what's in it for me and me alone. The only way you can really learn to be other-centered is by rising above it. Recognize you're the rider. Recognize I'm a part of a family, part of a community. But that requires being a soul. Recognizing that I who speak to you am not the body. I'm housed in the body and temporarily existing here. When the body's put in the ground, I separate him for eternity. I'll be what I'll be forever. But you see, then suddenly I relate to everyone differently. My family, my community, that's how I become really holy. I'm really deeply concerned for the Klal Yisrael. The minute you're into pleasures, you're pulling yourself into the mud. Not because the mud itself, because you're making yourself a behemoth. And you're making yourself totally absorbed with your own interests, your own needs. What happens is suddenly you're more behemoth, you're more horse than you are rider, and it's destructive to anything holy. I think this Rashi, this Ramban, and this Torah's Kanim explains to us a tremendous concept. Kedoshim to you, the Torah's approach in general, you should be holy. It's a klal. It's a rule in general. What does it mean to be holy? How could you be holy? The answer is very simple. It's intuitive. It's instinctive. You're a neshama. Hashem took you on from under Hashem's throne of glory, put you into this body, and that voice within you only wants to grow, accomplish, do what's right. All you got to do is listen to it. How do you listen to it? Ignore the other voice. And don't listen to the other voice. Don't be pulled after pleasures. How do you do that? Understand that every pleasure is just whatever. The rules of pleasure are universal. The sizzle is always better than the steak. Every pleasure is something to be used. Every pleasure is over-promised, over-delivered. Every pleasure passes. Every pleasure is the first time, the best time, and the only one first time. But it's so empty because once you're done, there's nothing. So I should run away from pleasures? No, use them. Use them as tools. And they're tools to help you serve Hashem, tools to make you happy, tools to make you a better Eved Hashem. But when you use them as tools, they don't damage you. When you understand their role in creation, you understand how to be holy. But Hashem warns, but keep in mind, be holy, because I'm holy. But Hashem says, my holiness is different than yours. You may dream, you may wish that you could be totally other-centered. It'll never work. Hashem says, I put this most powerful force within you, and this self-love, it's the most powerful force in existence, the need to be self-preserving. You'll never become other-centered unless use the Torah system. Use the mitzvahs. Grow, accomplish. Use Torah as a spiritual nourishment. Recognize your neshama. The more you recognize that, the more you start expanding your eye. First your family, then your community, and others still. And that's how you learn to be Kaddish. At the end of the day, Hashem will always be more holy than us. Hashem is totally, completely other-centered. And with that, now, I'd like to open the floor to questions, thoughts, observation. It can be on Nishmuz. On any other shmooze. Let's start with topic on this topic. Anything, anyone have any questions on this? I can't look in the chat, but Rami can look in the chat. And Rami, if you look in the chat, see if anyone asks questions there. If not, please feel free to raise your hand and bravely ask questions. I usually give people a warning ahead of time. I'm going to open the floor to questions so you can ask. But please feel free. If you have a question, please raise your hand, and it'll be my pleasure to answer, except I see the palm tree over there. Are you there? You're on. Please go ahead.
Oh, so I have a question. How do you stop your yetzer hara?
Lower and up.
Please, Avery, put everyone on mute, please.
Yetzer hara from randomly, that you don't need things in your life, that you live simple. How do you simple?
Okay, so let me answer that question. So the answer to that question is you need things and you can't eliminate needs. You will need things. The question is, are things in this world tools that you use to propel yourself to greater heights, or do you become absorbed with them? Are they things that use you? Are you using them or are they using you? So
the thing is, I try to tell myself everything should be in Kabbalah Shabbos, everything that we do. But then you get lost, you know? You kind of...
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt. It's not true. Not everything is covered. Shabbos is supposed to be the most holy. Shabbos, we take the best food. But listen, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I also got to live. I have to have clothing. I have to have food. Okay, not as good as Shabbos, but it's not only for Shabbos. I'm a servant of Hashem, 24/7, 365. I need things. I need food. I need clothing. I need a house. I need a car. Whatever. These are things I need. I'm using them as tools. Pleasures in this world are very, very good. They give me nachas ruach. They give me an ability to enjoy Hashem's proximity, enjoy, come closer to Hashem, but I'm using them. I'm the horse, I'm the rider, using the horse, not the horse just carrying the rider. The question is, who are you? And you recognize you're neshama, so suddenly it's good that there's nothing wrong with pleasures. Just don't let them control you. Don't let them become a focal point in and of themselves, and make sure that you use them as tools to grow.
I feel like the good food I should keep for Shabbos, I shouldn't eat like meat, is like I should try to keep it for Shabbos.
So yes,
it's hard.
Right, the best food you should keep for Shabbos, but you have to eat during the week as well.
Yeah.
You have to eat during the week. I mean, if you can fast 6 days a week. There were such once a time a tzaddikim like that. We're not there. You're supposed to eat every day, and every day you eat. But you just again, by the way, that's how you keep Shabbos holy. Right, that was Beis Shammai's system. Beis Shammai every day he'd go to the shuk and buy something to cover Shabbos. But that meant what he bought yesterday, he ate. So Sunday he went to the shuk, bought something to cover Shabbos. But then Monday when he went to the shuk, saw something better. So the thing he bought yesterday, he ate on Monday. Tuesday the same. Okay. So he ate every day of the week. But again, saving the best of Shabbos. All right, let's go on.
Can I ask you one more thing, please?
Yeah.
How would you not let your fears take over and keep you from believing in God?
How do you not keep your fears from taking over? So PM me. If you could private message me, I think I understand the question.
If things don't go right, I lose my thing of God.
Right, I understand. So, Mrs. Gittel, if I could ask if you could send me a private message, I'll gladly discuss it with you. I don't think this is the forum for it. Sure, my pleasure.
Oh,
okay.
Thank you.
Sure, my pleasure. Okay. Rami, you got the unmute button. Just unmute whoever... Grace Tzadik, I gotta take a question from Grace Tzadik. Go for it, Grace Tzadik. Long time no see. How you doing? What shmooze are you up to?
Oh, are you kidding me?
He went like
to third time probably.
But
your shmooze celebration I sent you like a year ago.
But you went all the way through but the new ones as well.
Everything. I'm following you like a group is rolling stone.
Grace Tzadik is... So, you know what a Grace Tzadik is? He's gone through all the shmoozim more than once, and he asked me on him, and he's a changed man.
I remember shmooze about pleasure, too. I don't remember which number.
Oh.
I remember number 118. It was part-time Jew, which I am. Part-time Jew, it was number 118.
Describing
as a part-time. So my question is about pleasure like that. I was born in Soviet Union. It was godless country, no God, no yeshivas, nothing. So every Jewish parent tried to put you in chess and music, whatever. So I graduated from music school. I was very good at chess. All geezers in the park teach me how to play chess. In 1 year, I beat them all. And you know me, like for 7 years, probably.
I'm
an actor, a Broadway show. That's my temple.
Okay.
And at the same time, I'm studying shmooze, and I figure out everything is prohibited. You can't listen to the woman's voice in opera because it's so seductive all of a sudden.
Yeah, well, not everything is permitted. But let me explain to you. Everything is permitted in the right way, the right time. Opera is fine. Women, not. But the men, opera, cantorial, whatever it may be, or other forms of music are beautiful. Go to a symphony. If you enjoy classical music, symphony orchestra is wonderful. It's beautiful. It's majestic. All these things are tools to be used in the right way, the right time. But the question is, do they use you or do you use them? And ultimately, that's the key difference whether you're holy or just whatever, like everyone else.
How they use me? How they use me? I use them.
You use them?
I use the opera. It's often only like go once a month.
Right. So
I saw all of them like once a week maybe.
Okay.
So what's wrong with that? I mean, Torah prohibited to watch like music and the woman start singing.
Grace, it's like, we'll get you a heter. You PM me. We'll get you a heter. It's recorded. It's not live. It's through a microphone. The microphone is just a reproduction of a voice. We'll find you a heter, but don't do it. It's not worth it.
So
these heterim are
growing accomplish then.
Keep growing. Just keep listening to shmuz. Keep doing everything else, and you're doing great.
Thank you.
All right, excellent. All right, other questions. TP has a question. Yes, ma'am, or sir, and order. TP.
Hi. You were saying that the whole goal of life is to become closer to Hashem by doing mitzvot, identifying with Hashem.
Okay.
And then after Hashem goes to Olam Haba and it gets to be closer to Hashem, that's the reward.
Can I interrupt for a minute? I don't like the way you said that. It's not my neshama, not my distant cousin, my alter ego. I don't want to think, I don't want to feel, I go there for eternity, and I am as close to Hashem as I made myself into. Not my neshama, not some altered version of me, not some splintered down me. I the one who feels, I the one who thinks. So if you continue the sentence with I, everything you said is perfect.
But then before we were born, was the I there?
Yep, 100%. I was under Hashem's throne of glory. Hashem said, Shafer, into this generation you shall be born. This birth order, these talents, these abilities, these shortcomings, go out there, ford those streams, climb those mountains, become the great person you should be. But I existed before I was in this body. And when my body's put in the ground, I will exist and on forever as well. But it's I, not some neshama. Me, I. The one who feels, the one who thinks. I who tell my arms and legs to move. I who, you know what I'm saying? Rousseau Solante says these words, there's no difference between the last moment of a person's life and the moment after, kim pshitas aguf levad, except for just taking off the body, like taking off a coat. There's no distinction, no difference. I'm alert, awake, probably more awake. You know, in this world, I'm sleepy, I'm tired, I'm always cranky, things are bothering me. But when I die, my body's put to the ground, and whoosh, with a brilliant acuity, with a brilliant awareness, I come alive. And in that state of my perfection, whatever that might be, I will be for eternity. But it's me, I.
So if that was there before, and it came from under the Kisa code, isn't that closer than being closer to Hashem? Like, isn't that a close enough spot to Hashem? So why do you have to then work to be closer to Hashem or Olam Haba and not just cut it? You appreciate something more when it's earned. Like, you're already there. Closer,
right. So Grace is Tzadik, what's the answer to that question, Grace? What shmuz is that? What shmuz did I deal with that? The Beishos's question? You remember?
I don't remember.
Grace is Tzadik, go back to the beginning. Start again. Start over. All right, anyway.
Now I have to learn numbers and then segments. I can answer it. Whatever you are saying, I can say it wasn't the schmutz or nothing.
Right.
The whole schmutz.
Right, okay.
Next time around, you got to remember the numbers.
Right, next time around, that's right. Okay, let me answer the question. The answer is that a neshama is great, just like a malach is great. Everything in creation is static. Everything in creation, whatever level Hashem made it on, is static and will remain there for eternity, with one exception, man. When man is put into this world, he's given the opportunity to grow greater than Malachim or sink lower than animals, but he and he alone can change, he can grow. That which we take so for granted, I can change, I can grow, is not so simple. Nothing else in creation can change. Nothing else in creation has free will. We alone have free will, but the type of free will that changes me when I'm actually tempted and I need to resist, and that makes me... So the answer is yes. It was wonderful being under Kisei Kavod. Hashem in his infinite wisdom understands there's much more that can be gained. If a person goes into this world and grows and accomplishes, really becomes great, they'll be much closer to Hashem, much greater than Malachim. They'll reach stellar heights that it's worth being put into this world for the 70-odd years we're here, because Hashem in his infinite wisdom understands how great that potential is. It's a wonder to schmooze him.
I'm
sorry?
Olam Haba could bring them from under the Kisei Kavod.
Say again, please.
the place that somebody can earn the Olam Haba is greater than under the Kisei HaKavod.
I don't know if the place is greater, but the human being who's put in this world can be greater than he was then, or less. And by the way, that's what happens. You know, all the neshamas are in a holding pen. And one of the neshamas I've discussed it, the Beis Yosef discussed that, all the neshamas are in a holding pen. And some come into this world and they come back brilliant, powerful, amazing, grown. And every neshama then says, let me go down. But then they see some neshamas come back damaged, some come back blackened, some come back amputees, some don't make it back at all. And then the neshamas say, it's a little too risky, I don't want to do it. Again, Hashem's infinite wisdom understands the potential to be great is worth it. And therefore, Hashem puts us into this world. So the I whom speaking to you can be much greater if I use my time well, make the right decisions. And that's what we're put in this world to do.
Yeah, the only way that it seems to be making sense is if you can earn, you can become greater.
Much greater, phenomenally great. Greater than Malachim, much greater than anything. The Malachim tremble. When Chaim Kanevsky came up to Shemayim, the Malachim were like, the great, great power, meaning what a human being can accomplish here is beyond description. We take everything for granted. I didn't do mitzvah. It's nice to another person. What does it matter? We don't understand the gravity of our actions. We don't understand what we accomplish. But Hashem does, and Hashem put us through this world. You know, so much pain and so much suffering, it's worth it, says Hashem. Why? Because what you could be is so much greater than even what you were before. So much closer, so much more enjoyment of proximity, being close to Hashem, that it's worth it. All right, but let's move on Mrs. Masuda, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I had a bunch of questions to ask
bunch.
You. I sent an email. I hope you received it. So is there any way I can contact you?
Yes, email works. Rebbe@theshmooze.com. 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 That works. So you can PM, private message me on WhatsApp. But the email definitely works.
Okay, what's your phone number?
That's a risky question. I'll say it quietly. 845-216-9330. Shh, don't say it again. 845-216.
I need to write it down.
Oh.
845-216-9330.
Okay,
because
two on
blast you
on the
here.
Right, no one.
That's it.
No one else heard that. No one. I whispered it, so no one heard. All right, but let's move on. All right, I'll
send you the top on here.
I'll look, Lena. I'll look, and I will try to respond. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Who else has a question?
If Rebbe needs a call, to answer phone calls, so let me know.
I hear you, Avrami. I hear you. I'm with you. All right. It looks like Avrami Jacobs has his hand raised, believe it or not. Yes.
I'm allowed to ask you a question?
Yes, you are.
So I don't know if I speak for other people, but I'm certainly speaking for myself. How do we avoid the middle ground that we know everything we're supposed to do and hopefully we're pretty much doing it, davening 3 times a day, learning as much as we're able and doing as many mitzvahs as we're able and trying to be as selfless as we can. But all that being said, we live in a world of comfort, and obviously there's a lot of pain and suffering out there, but there's a lot of comfort and delights and pleasures. And it's easy to kind of be focused on Avodas Hashem, but also focused on pleasures. And sort of, maybe it's a schar and v'onish type of a relationship with Hashem, where you're like, I feel like I can just, you know, do everything pretty well, but I could still maximize all the pleasures in this world too. And it's,
so
I think, an easy, dangerous pitfall to fall into.
So I agree with you, but there's one thing. You should maximize the pleasures in this world, but maximize them as tools that you use to grow. And maximize it. So I want you to have maximum pleasure. That's what I was trying to tell the guys in high school. Hashem doesn't want us. Hashem created a beautiful world, replete with wonders and just beauty. Why did Hashem make such? Look, I was looking in the beach scene, the picture next to me, the palm tree blowing in the wind. Why did Hashem make such a beautiful world? Hashem wants us to enjoy. This world is the prozdor. This is the corridor, but Hashem wants us to enjoy the corridor as well, because Hashem's the mativ, the giver. So you're supposed to enjoy this world. The key is, am I using these tools to get me closer to Hashem, or are these tools using me to get their way? So you should maximize pleasure, but use it wisely, guardedly. You know, it requires, you know, there's definitely, it's a wise idea to reframe, you know, every once in a while. So you cut back in certain areas, different areas at different time. So you learn to be in control. But again, the idea, we're not ascetics. We're not the monk, you know, goes to Tibet and climbs the mountain, you know, lives on rice, a bowl of rice a week, you know. That's not our religion. But again, the key is to remember there's a horse and a rider. Yes, I feed the horse because the horse is getting me somewhere. I'm using the horse to travel. I'm using the horse to get me. Horse is powerful. I can run 35 miles an hour. I can't. It can run for days. I can't. I'm going to use this horse. Feed it well. Feed it well. But remember, it's a horse. You're the rider.
So everyone would say, like, I mean, obviously a person needs to take breaks. Everyone needs to know themselves. You can't be the monk.
Right.
But at the same time, when you are using those comforts to stay focused on why using the comforts, meaning it's like, yeah, a certain, like, just keeping that mindset present.
I'll make it very easy. Set goals. Set concrete, real goals for yourself, and suddenly you won't have time for pleasures except as a break that you need so you can grow more, you can accomplish more. We're all very busy, very, very busy. And what are you busy with? Set goals, realistic, real goals, and stick to them. And suddenly every distraction, every pleasure will serve a good purpose because I don't have time just to play. If I need it, okay, I'll take it. You know, I remember there was a fellow in yeshiva who every once in a while he would go to the machine and buy a chocolate bar. But I knew this guy well. He was a tremendous masmid. When he stopped learning, go buy a chocolate bar because he was exhausted. He needed whatever. He needed that break. That's holy. That's using something as a tool. So you set goals, realistic goals, but real demanding goals. And suddenly you're very, very involved, very busy. And then the pleasures that you take are almost automatically going to be in the sort that, you know, you need a break. You need some, you know. Is it easy? No. That's a challenge of life. If it was easy, we'd all be tzaddikim. I'm not going to tell you. You got to do it the best you can. All right. Any other questions, thoughts, observations? For or against? Any other questions? If we don't have questions, I could save my voice. It's wonderful. But anyone has a question?
In the back.
Okay.
Yeah. Could I just say someone wants to know if there's a mantra to use to fend off the Yetzirah?
Yes. It's called Tefillah, davening. It's called asking Hashem for help. Yeah. The mantra would be Modani Lefanecha. The mantra would be Modi Menachnu Lach. The mantra could be Serm Sukim Lishuascha Kvisi Hashem. It's important to have mantras. Very important to have mantras that you use again and again because they're powerful. You want to hear a great one from Zig Ziglar? Someone just showed me the Zig Ziglar book. I won't let up. I won't ease up. I won't give up until I'm taken up. Woo! Hear that again? I won't let up. I won't ease up. I won't give up until I'm taken up. That's great. I love it. It's not holy in a sense. Not from Chazal. It's not from Nach, but it's a mighty good quote. All right, good. Any other questions? My pleasure. Thoughts, questions, observation. If you have a hand raised, I see no name, but one. Does one have a question? You have a question,
please? Should I read some questions from the chat?
Yeah, please do. Another 3-4 minutes because my voice is running out. Go ahead.
So there was a comment, Rabbi Schaefer, you must be a wonderful parent, father, and husband. Many need to learn from you what it is to be a mensch. Thank you. It's nice to see very good people and that it's possible to elevate ourselves.
Yes, I am because all my kids are married. Well, basically all my kids are married. That's why. It's very easy to be a good dad when your kids are married. By the way, grandparenting is such a machaya. No one tells me not to. My daughters wouldn't tell me not to. My son would, right? So I could give them gifts. I could buy candy. I could buy, you know. And the minute there's trouble, send them back to the parents. Oh, my goodness. I know that I'm a very good grandparent. That I know. Very good.
Any diaper changing?
No, that's not what grandparents do. Grandparents' job is to spoil the grandkids. A grandparent doesn't discipline. A grandparent does one thing only, spoil the grandkids. I love it. Yeah, go ahead. Any other questions? Any in the chat?
Yeah. According to your premise that Hashem gets no benefit from what we do.
My premise? Stop, please. Not my premise. Chazal, Darach Hashem, Mitzvot Shorim, Musa Sefer after Musa Sefer. It's not my premise. I don't contend. I don't offer my opinion. I don't have an opinion. I can tell you what the Rishonim say. I can tell you what the Bali Musa say. I can tell you what Chazal say. not my contention, not my opinion, but again, so let's, but assuming that according to Chazal, who say this, yeah.
Yeah, how do you explain the concept of Tenu Ozel Kit, which seems to imply that Hashem derives some sort of strength?
Yes, absolutely, no question. When you answer Kaddish, Yehei Shmei Rabba Mavarach, you give energy kavayachol to Hashem. What does that mean? When you elevate the world, when you give a bracha to Hashem, what it does is, Hashem gave us incredible power. To Hashem is involved in the world in a limited sense. What we do when we daven, what we do when we say Kaddish, what we do is we ask Hashem to be more present in the world, to show Himself more, to demonstrate His control more, to be more prominent, to be more accessible. And Hashem gave us a koach to do that. That's a power that we have, and it's powerful. Why? Because Hashem is hidden behind the scenes. Until Mashiach comes, Hashem is hidden behind the scenes, you don't see Him. But we have ways of getting Hashem to be more accessible, more available, more there. And one of them is Tenu Oz LaHashem, meaning it's really Kedusha, Kaddish, these things, brachas, thanking Hashem. And what it does is, more than anything, is ask Hashem to be more present, more available in the world. All right, let's stop here. I think we exhausted my energy level anyway, and we'll pick up next week. Mr. Shem, thank you all for listening. And if you have any questions, please feel free. You can PM me on WhatsApp or rebbe@theshmooze.com, rebbe@theshmooze.com. If you would like to be part of the WhatsApp group, we send out motivational, inspirational videos, 3-4 minute videos. Please just PM me, or again, send me an email to rebbe@theshmooze.com. Thank you very much.